97.1 FM Talk. On demand audio. This is the Annie Fry Show.
It is Mike Elam sitting in for Annie Fry today on 97.1 FM Talk. You know, it's unusual that I get the opportunity to have a guest in the studio. Normally, somebody's on the phone with me. But today, I get to do it twice. We had Brian Westbrook, who was here, who's the executive director and the founder of Coalition Life. Scott Fawn is in the studio with us. How are you, man?
I'm great. It's so great to be in here with you. It just worked out perfectly on this Columbus Day to get to come in.
I love the fact that you were in town. And it's like, hey, come in. Let's talk. Because I know a lot of times on Annie's show, they do a lot of national politics, and yeah. I appreciate that. And that's kind of the thing that on 97.1, when you're a conservative talk radio station and Donald Trump is the nominee, you're going to talk a lot of federal politics. And I know Josh Hawley is making the rounds around the state right now. I just talked to Sam Saffa, his campaign guy, before I came down here, and they're going to do a rally in St. Charles on Wednesday. They were just at Cottleville.
I saw Harrison Buckner.
Harrison Buckner was there with him.
Right.
Yep. So they were...
He also came from Cottleville down to my neck of the woods in Poplar Bluff.
He did. He's trying to do the F-150 tour on his own.
I love it.
He's
going
to have a Holly bus before long. He'll be following Kehoe around, which we got the chance to start the show.
If you're going
to
follow Kehoe around, you're going to put some gas in that thing. That dude gets around. Now, man, I like to think I get around. I don't get around half of what Kehoe does.
So he is, he's down in Osage County today. At least he was there around lunch. I shouldn't say today. That's where he was around lunch. So I was watching your show this weekend, and I love the fact that you were checking in with Republican senators mm-hmm. and Democrat folks of seeing, hey, where are these races going to go? And they had some hot Senate races I want to talk a little bit about.
The hottest one's right here.
It really is in Senate 15. But before we get to that, Crystal Quaid's a nice lady.
Mm-hmm. She is.
I just don't see her having a snowball's chance of beating Mike Kehoe.
I'll tell you, Crystal Quaid is an extremely competent person. She's very liberal, so if you're not very liberal, you probably should not vote for her. But Crystal Quaid is the type of person that, as a Republican, I'm going to vote for Mike Kehoe. You see all these other people in the media, they'll tell you all this, oh, I'm this and this. No, I just tell you how the cabbage, you can dislike it. I voted for Kehoe in August. I'm going to vote for Kehoe in November. But I'll tell you this, if Crystal Quaid becomes governor, as a Republican, I will tell you, a person who does not share my political beliefs will be governor. But a competent person will be governor, and she could competently do the job. But yes, nobody could beat Mike Kehoe. He's the bull of the woods. The fact of the matter is, the Democrats should have all voted for a different candidate because Mike Kehoe will win by a landslide. Nobody can beat Mike Kehoe in the state of Missouri, and he will actually be the guy that goes and negotiates, not on Twitter, not on Facebook,
right,
one-on-one. And there's going to be a lot of champagne popping for the huge Republican things that are going to happen because he knows how to actually accomplish stuff.
You know, we were talking about off-air the primary and how Bill Igel overperformed where people
Absolutely.
Thought he was. I mean, I remember when he was polling at 2-4% mm-hmm. and Ashcroft was beating Kehoe by 20. And we're like, man, this race is all but over, right? Ashcroft's going to win this thing. Mike Kehoe drove the wheels off the bus, literally, going all around the state. But so did Bill Igel. And Bill Igel went from that 2-3-4 up to 33 and had a great showing. But I think when it came down to it, Kehoe he just has the it factor.
He does.
And when he is with a crowd, and I don't care if I've been in crowds with him that's a small room of mm-hmm. folks, and I got a chance to MC an event at Hunter Farms that had 350 people there. And I would tell you, he can fit any room with the message that he has and the way that he comes across. He is genuinely likable.
You know who he reminds me of? And I've been in every type of room with Mike Kehoe. He reminds me of Tony La Russa in the sense that if you did not know baseball, you weren't even a baseball fan, if you walked into a luncheon and Tony La Russa was there, the way he carried himself, the charisma he had, you would know that's a big deal. You might not know who Tony La Russa was, but you would
know he's somebody.
Tony La Russa is a big deal. Mike Kehoe, now that he's governor, everybody will see it'll be a big deal. But even when he was a state senator, whatever, when he walks into a room, you know, okay, I don't know what that guy does, but I'll bet he's a big deal.
Right. You get that feeling. I agree. There are some people who walk into a room and you just instantly know, okay, I don't know anything about you, but I can tell you're a powerful person. I just feel it radiate off of you.
And, you know, David Gregory, I do think you have to be a little older to really have that gravitas.
Yeah.
But David Gregory, the Senate candidate out in West County, is the type of guy that has some of that charisma. He's got some of that it factor. It is an interesting thing. St. Louis County has sent this state many great politicians. I don't know. Missouri's favorite son, no question, is Eric Schmidt.
Yep.
He's the most popular public servant in this state, sent to this state by the folks in St. Louis County. I think they have a chance to send another one in David Gregory.
So how do you see that race going? So we're talking about Senate District 15. It's out in West County. Andrew Koenig is the senator there right now. He's terming out. But that is one of the top three hottest races for the Senate going on in the state of Missouri, wouldn't you think?
I'll give you my brag. There's one in Clay County where the Clay Como Ford plant is, leans Democrat. The Republicans have a great candidate in Jerry Nolte. He's the guy that even Democrats vote for because he's just that dude.
The former John Rizzo seat?
That's the Lauren Arthur seat across the river.
Okay.
If it wasn't for Jerry Nolte, that seat would be gone to the Democrats. He's the one Republican that could win it. Then south of the river, the old Ronnie DePasco, Victor Callahan, Rizzo seat, the seat you never thought would be Republican, it looks like it's going to be Republican.
Wow.
If you had to guess, Independence is Republican, Clay County, which used to be Republican, is Democrat, and all of the heat is in St. Louis County, because I'll tell you, on Amendment 3, which is really that's probably the top thing on the ballot in Missouri.
I agree. Yep.
The intensity on the pro Amendment 3 side is right here in the St. Louis media market. Kansas City is going to vote for Amendment 3. Outstate Missouri is not. St. Louis is going to vote for it, but it's going to be intense. And that's led the Democrats to put their spending. They have a very good recruit in Joe Peerless, very respected guy. To me, David Gregory, if you want to make a difference in this election, go out to Chesterfield, knock doors for David Gregory. Maybe do a little Amendment 3 while you're out there. But this is the epicenter of politics, is right here, right in St. Louis County, in 15. It will be the one that determines if the Republicans hold or lose a seat. And it's a big deal. They'll lose their supermajority, and they'll lose it right here in St. Louis. But on the flip side, David Gregory is a very talented politician. He looks like $1 million. He's very charismatic. If you want to be
good at raising money,
I will tell you this: it's like if you could wind the clock back to 2008. If today you could say, you know what, I'll give a Saturday or I'll give a couple afternoons knocking doors for Eric Schmidt. If you could go back in time and do that in 2008, you probably would have.
Yep.
If you want a similar trajectory, similar quality of politician, take a couple nights or a Saturday and go knock for David Gregory, and 10, 15 years from now, I guarantee you'll be glad you did.
How close do you think this Senate majority is going to be? Do you think they're going to keep the supermajority, or do you think
St. Louis County will tell the tale? I mean,
is it really that close?
Amendment 3 is, let's just be honest, it is a drag on Republicans.
It is.
Republicans have won areas that probably should be Democratic because the Republican Party in the state's so strong, their fundraising is so strong. Pardon me, but I think if you just extrapolate forward, this is the epicenter. And frankly, if the Democrats would have got a stronger candidate in the 23rd, if you look at their voting trends, 23rd is the city of St. Charles in eastern St. Charles County. It's about three cycles behind the 15th. The 15th, this county is trending more Democrat. And I think the way you're going to be able to tell, will there be anybody still representing St. Louis County, except for obviously Ben Brown and Eureka?
Right.
But this is the last one. And I think if you're a business person, you want a member of the majority party in the state Senate you can go to for things. And the only way to have one, the last ability to have one, is David Gregory out in Chesterfield.
So step back to state for a while. We've already talked about the governor's race, and I agree. I think Kehoe's going to run away with this thing.
Yeah.
Is there going to be any other competition at any other statewide office, or is this going to be a Republican sweep?
Republican sweep. I mean, Andrew Bailey's a bulletproof tiger.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy stood down $15 million of New York money and won every county in the state. Andrew Bailey's a guy you're probably going to be voting for 8 years from now. He is just, do yourself a favor. If you get a chance to go out and meet Andrew Bailey at something, go out and meet a guy that's probably the next governor. Go make it a point to go meet him. Don't let the Post-Dispatch tell you about what he does. Go meet him for yourself. He does come to things.
He does.
And you could meet Andrew Bailey, and you get that picture for the Me With wall. He may not be on your wall yet, but I think he will be. I think the Republicans are having a major sweep. You have Vivek Malik, a St. Louis County guy, right here. I think he'll do very well. I don't think there'll be any problems. David Wassinger is a St. Louis County guy running for lieutenant governor. I don't think there'll be any problems in the fall, but I would encourage everyone, if you want to actually make a difference, more than just complaining on Facebook, get with David Gregory's campaign. That is the fight. That is where the heat and the battle in this state is on Amendment 3 in St. Louis County and the Senate 15 in St. Louis County.
How do you see these amendments going? I mean, you got a lot of them on the ballot.
I think Amendment 7, I almost wish they would have saved that for 2026, simply because that's a turnout thing. It really doesn't change anything, but it's a good to get people fired up and turned out to the polls.
So for folks who don't know Amendment 7.
7's about only citizens voting and then ranked choice voting, some of those things. The Amendment 2 is sports betting. Now, that's an interesting. I don't know how that's going to go. You have the casinos are fighting amongst themselves. Caesars wants a better cut. The other casinos are willing to take what's on the table. So you have two well-funded campaigns. If you've watched a football game Sunday, you got to
see a lot of them.
Yeah, you got to see teachers arguing in different commercials of what this is going to do.
Right.
I don't care where they spend the tax revenue, if you want the truth. I'd like to be able to bet on the Chiefs when I want to bet on the Chiefs.
I don't think that where the tax money is going is a determining factor for most people who are going to vote for this.
Most people don't believe it anyway.
Right. I think we've all been down that road with the lottery. Yep. And we all kind of went to that thing and went, okay, this was all going to go to help our schools. And then you had a shell game that happened that we all know. And I don't think people believe that now. So I think, and then you've got the whole thing that depending on how they want to structure it, they could take a loss and there's no money that's there. But I think what's driving people is you have an awful lot of people who want a sports bet in the state of Missouri, especially younger voters. Young men want to vote for this. They want to sports bet.
Here's my frustration, Mike. I hear all these people, and I hear it a lot in your neck of the woods. Yep. They believe in liberty.
Right.
They believe in freedom. But a lot of those people only believe in liberty and freedom if it's stuff they think you should be doing. Like, I actually think if you want to go bet on the Chiefs, how is it my business what you do?
I'm with you.
It was kind of like to me in pot. I didn't care, but I'm like, I don't know who I am to tell somebody they can't go smoke pot. I actually think you should have a conservative government that doesn't tell you what to do. I think you should be able to bet on the Chiefs because it's your right with a little pittance of money they don't tax. Let you do with what you want.
I think that sports betting is going to pass. I think
it'll be close.
I think Amendment 3 is going to be really close.
I know.
Well, I was watching your show during the primaries, and you were talking about initiative petition, and you were telling the Republicans, don't you guys think that all this stuff you're trying to load up into this bill, it's a bit of clean Missouri?
It totally is.
Well, I think you're going to have a clean Missouri happen with Amendment 3. So what I mean by that is, I think there's an awful lot of people who just read the headlines, and that's part of the reason why we had Brian Westbrook to talk a little bit more about all the stuff that's in Amendment 3 that you don't pay attention to. It's a lot more than what the headline is telling you. But I think the pendulum swung far right. I think this one takes it far left. And I think if it does pass, like you think, I think that a lot of people are going to have buyer's remorse after it passes. And I think they're going to come back just like they did Clean Missouri. It passed because they thought they were voting for one thing. But once it passed, in Nancy Pelosi's favorite language, you know, we have to pass it to find out what's in the bill. So I think once it passes, if it does, people are going to find out that's not where Missouri is. All the transgender stuff, the no restrictions that's in that bill. I think you're going to have people that are going to come back, and they're going to want a second bite of that apple.
I think that is very likely. The thing is, can the pro-life folks ever really get over winning? It has damaged them greatly. I watch these pro-life people fight every day. The only thing the pro-lifers hate more than abortion is other pro-lifers. It is a very divided group.
Kind of sounds like the Republican Party in general.
It kind of does.
It's kind of where we are
but
right now.
Hop in the truck and let's take 50 from here to Jefferson City. You're going to see three different types of yard signs because they can't even get along on a yard sign. I mean, if the pro-life folks can win this fight, as divided as they are, then they're a bulletproof tiger. No one can stop them. I think you're right, and I think the best thing for this state, if this does pass, is for some people to get together soberly and say, okay, we went a little far.
Right.
Now, this is a little far the other way, guys. We're going to come back with something that is, I don't know the details of abortion policy, but that could be a little more moderate and restrict some of the excesses of Amendment 3. I just feel like there's a lot of people who are considering themselves pro-life, that are going to vote for Amendment 3 because they think, okay, this was too much.
I can see that, and I know some of them.
Yeah.
And I've tried to talk to them, like, how do you feel about all the transgender stuff that's in there? And they're like, what are you talking about? I'm like, you need to read that. You need to understand what you're really voting for. But I don't know that a ton of people are going to read the details of this.
No one's going to read the details.
I think a lot of people are going to be
surprised. Elected official. I'll put you on the spot. Do you go down while you're voting and read through all that stuff? Because I don't. I'm be honest with you. I'm just a simple hillbilly. I do not read all the details.
I have to get into more of them because I'm called to the carpet when you get behind a microphone.
Okay, that's a good point.
So you have to be pretty informed of a lot of the stuff that's going on. But even with that, when Brian came in, there was some stuff in the bill that I wasn't aware of. Just some wording that's in there that it makes it really, really gray. And
I'm going to rely on you for your analysis of that, because not only will I admit to it, I will not be reading it. I like to be as informed as my viewers, and I will not be reading the language, nor do I think anyone else will, except for exceptions like yourself. And I do think there's a feeling in folks' guts that they're pro-life, generally.
Right.
But they're like, this is a little much.
Most everybody goes with those three exceptions that said, you know, the life of the mother, rape, incest. Those are three things that you hear across the board. And even Trump talks about it. I mean, it was kind of funny that Melania has come out and said, I'm pro-choice, which has been interesting in the interviews that she's been doing and her talking about, I don't want the government telling me what to do with my body.
How many households do you think there are in the Senate 15, which is Chesterfield, Town and Country, Wildwood, who have a pro-choice and a pro-life person in that family?
I agree.
I bet you there's, and the issue is, if you're pro-choice, you're definitely voting for Amendment 3. The thing I think the problem is there's a lot of folks that want to be, that are pro-life. They consider themselves pro-life.
They do.
They vote for pro-life candidates. And one of the reasons they vote for a candidate is they are pro-life. I think they feel like maybe there's a little much. And also, let's be honest, the pro-life camp has spent the last year in court, in the legislature, arguing, wanting to not have this vote. They have not spent this last year out communicating and sharing what convinced me to be pro-life was the absolutely positive message of being pro-life. There's a lot of positive messages to be pro-life. You don't have to scare people.
Right.
I'm pro-life, not because I'm afraid of the pro-choice stuff. I'm pro-life because I think it's a positive thing to bring a life into this world. But the last year they've spent in court and the legislature doing everything they could do to avoid having this election. And I think they might have been better off spending that time talking to the people of Missouri, talking to people in Chesterfield, trying to assuage their concerns, maybe offering a compromise that would have trumped this one. I think if you took Donald Trump's abortion policy, I hate to say this, and pro-choice people won't like it, but I think it's probably where most of Missourians are.
I think it's probably where most of Americans are.
Yeah,
you're right. When you look at that, because they want some sort of exception in there, but they don't want what Amendment 3 is, but I don't think they're going to know that until after they vote for it. Can you hang out for a little bit?
Oh, sure, you bet.
So we're talking with Scott Fahn, who is the publisher of Missouri Times. You probably see him every week. He's the host of This Week in Missouri Politics, which is the number one show that you're going to find out of what's going on in state politics. It's Mike Elam sitting in for Addie Fry. We'll continue to talk with Scott on the other side on 97.1 FM Talk. A little bit better when you get a little Motley Crue going, right? That's just a way that you should kickstart your day. Just kickstart my heart with a little. That's my high school music at that point. Motley Crue. Scott Fahn is sitting in with us. You see him on TV every week with This Week in Missouri Politics. Are you a Motley Crue guy?
Oh, in Poplar Bluff, we're a little bit behind St. Louis, usually culturally. So while you thought Motley Crue was your high school, Motley Crue was my college. What are you talking about?
Okay, I got you by a few years.
But I'm from the Boot Hill, so I'm a little behind. Now, I have to admit, I have to say my props to AC/DC and Skynyrd, but I love Motley Crue.
My 40th high school reunion is coming up in a week and a half. Next weekend. I'm going back to Berryville, Arkansas. Big, great town of 3,600 people. That's where I graduated. I'm born in Donovan, but I did high school in Berryville, Arkansas. Graduated with 86 people in my class.
I got you at Neelyville. I graduated with 58.
You do win.
You're
the winner there.
It's like back home we have a pour-off. Like, if you say you're poor, I have to come back with eight ways I was poorer than you. That's just a Boot Hill tradition. Can't, you cannot let somebody be poorer than you in the room.
I had more parents than anybody else because when your father is the Southern Baptist minister at the church right across the street from the high school, everything you do, I have a set of parents that are watching me. And long before the internet and long before cell phones, if I was doing something on one side of the town, by the time I got home, and mind you, that's not a big town. By the time I got home, my dad's like, so what were you doing over at Jones's place? I'm like, man, I can't do anything.
You got to tell them snitches get stitches. You got to establish yourself. Come hard.
That's just how it goes. Hey, Ethan, I do want to jump back. I want to do a quick federal thing, and then we'll talk state again. But I don't know if you have headphones? You do have headphones. So we were talking earlier today with Charlie Gasparino, and one of the things that we were talking about was J.D. Vance and how J.D. Vance has a great way of putting these national reporters in their place. And I want to give you a couple instances of that. Let's start off with the New York Times reporter in Cut 12.
Okay. Did Donald Trump lose the 2020 election?
Well, let me ask you a question. Is it okay that big technology companies censored the Hunter Biden laptop story, which independent analysis have said cost Donald Trump millions of votes?
Senator Vance, I'm going to ask you again. Did Donald Trump lose the 2020 election?
Did big technology companies censor a story that independent studies have suggested would have cost Trump millions of votes?
Senator Vance, the question. I'm going to ask you again. Did Donald Trump lose the 2020 election?
And I've answered
election?
Your question with another question. You answer my question, and I'll answer yours.
I love the fact that he just rejects their premise. And he did it again on ABC. And Martha tried to push back on him in talking about the Venezuelan gangs taking over apartment complexes. And here's how that conversation went. 13.
The incidents were limited to a handful of apartment complexes, and the mayor said our dedicated police officers have acted on those concerns. A handful of problems.
Only, Martha, do you hear yourself? Only a handful of apartment complexes in America were taken over by Venezuelan gangs, and Donald Trump is the problem and not Kamala Harris's open border.
I love that fact. How many apartment complexes is it okay to be run by Venezuelan gangs in your community before you think it's a problem, Martha?
And I thought J.D. Vance was outstanding in the sense that right now we all know who we're voting for, right?
Right.
I know who I'm voting for. I'm going to vote for President Trump. But I'll tell you this. I think the who won the election thing is just tiresome. Do I think Donald Trump won? No, I don't. I thought he ran a great race, came up short. Am I sick of hearing about it? Yes. Am I going to vote for him this time, even though he won't admit he lost? Yes. But I thought J.D. Vance put on a clinic there of taking a question meant to try to trip him up. It was an aggressive question. He was on ABC, so maybe he just should have expected that. But he turned the premise in a very charming way. And I think if you're, let's say you're not a ranked partisan, you're just a person working for a living. In my view, I think the way he reset that is very compelling.
I do too.
It was almost like what Barack Obama used to do to hostile questions was charm people. I thought it was a very charming answer to a very hostile question that I think would take folks and make them think, you know, okay, yeah, how many apartment complexes do the Democrats want to be ran by Venezuelan gangs?
How many is okay? And there's been a lot have been trolling her on Twitter now and showing her $2.2 million home that she lives in and saying, well, would it be okay if they move into your house, Martha?
Yeah.
How many Venezuelan gangs do you allow in your neighborhood to come in and run things?
What if the Venezuelan... That's why I loved Governor Abbott driving the illegal immigrants to Martha's Vineyard, to Chicago, to New York. You want them to take care of the problem? Here you go. Take your little taste.
Yeah.
I have a feeling that there's a number of a percentage of if African Americans move into a county, the white liberals leave.
Right.
How much you want to bet if the Venezuelan gang pulled up next to her $2.2 million mansion, Ms. Radich is out of town.
She is selling that house in a heartbeat. We are moving on.
And that's the part that cracks me up about these people. They don't, when you, it's all theoretical to them because they live very elitist, top-end lives. They ain't never been to stands in South City, and they ain't never going to go.
No.
And so I guess when I break it down, that elitism, I think the juice of Trump, let's be honest, a lot of things Trump suggests is not conservative. It's pragmatic. Dick Gephardt, the son of a milkman, worked his whole life for the tariffs Donald Trump put in. Let's be
That's
honest.
That's true.
But what he is it's not, I don't think he's Republican, Democrat. I don't think he's conservative, liberal. I think he's anti-elitist. Because I think that elitism is what people can't stand. And it's what J.D. Vance slowly showed her and these people on Twitter. That's just an elitist question from an elitist. And good on him for turning it around on her.
And I think you see it in Brett Baer has a great thing on Fox Nation that talks about the history of political parties and how they have evolved over the course of our country's history. And he talks about the fact that Donald Trump reset the Republican Party. I heard Josh Hawley talking about this in 2018 when he was talking about it. And you had, you know, before Donald Trump, unions were Democrat for sure and wasn't even a question, right? Now, with Donald Trump, you actually had the Teamsters who refused to endorse this year because their party, their leadership is still Democrat elitist. But 70% of the Teamsters said, we're voting Trump. And they said, we're staying out of this because they would have a riot and a revolution would happen in the Teamsters if they would have endorsed Kamala Harris.
Hey, I'll tell you, I'm just a Boot Hill farm boy. But if you work for a living, put me on your team. I'm a big fan of labor, the trades.
Yep.
The old boys that are working right now, listen to this. I'm a big fan, and I credit Josh Hawley a great deal for being one of the first Republicans to step up and say, you know what? Wait a minute. These guys are working for a living. I'm on their side. I'm a huge fan of labor unions, of the trades, of the folks that are out working today. You're swinging a hammer. What can I do to help you, sir? You're putting pipes together. You're twisted wires together. Tell me how to be on your side. I think that's the future of the Republican Party, and I think it's awesome. I don't know Josh Hawley that well. I could do the others, but I really credit him for stepping up and saying, you know what, wait a minute, tell me more about your side. I'm with you.
Yeah, I was always told for a long time that, you know, union guys are Democrat guys. And I got to tell you, in 2022, when I was out knocking doors for my county council race, I had an awful lot of union Republicans.
Oh, yeah.
There were an awful lot of union guys that still had their Trump stuff hanging proudly. Like, I would go up to some doors, and they had signs that said, proud union home, and a Trump flag outside. I mean, Donald Trump completely reset who the parties were, because it used to be, you would say the elitist, if you will, were the Republicans. And now the elitist, by far, are the Democrats, all in. One thing I wanted to touch on before we leave, because you travel the state in your F-150 tour and getting out there, you talk to people all over the place. You're in the cities, you're in the small towns, you're all over. Tell me a little bit about this issue with the judges and retaining the judges that you're hearing some stuff about.
I saw, you know, people take pictures of their ballot now.
Yep.
I know you're opposed to, Kurt Barr would tell you can't.
Yeah.
But I
don't think that's something you're legally supposed to do.
Yeah, but people do.
They do.
There's a lot of things I'm not legally supposed to do, but being a white trash hillbilly, I do them. I saw people voting to not confirm Judge Gooch and Judge Broniak. And they were Republicans, and they were mad about the Supreme Court ruling putting Amendment 3 on the ballot. Number one, they voted against that. They sided with the dissent. They actually took the stance that you said you wanted the court to take. Judge Broniak and Judge Gooch are very conservative judges. I promise you, if you want to roll the dice again, the chances of you getting a more liberal judge is extremely high, 90% or better. If you're a Republican, these are your Republican judges that voted the way you say you wanted people to vote. So it's again, it's the problem with the Republican Party. Why won't you take yes for an answer? These two judges are excellent judges. I break more laws than I even know. But if you talk to Republicans, Mark Ellinger, folks in that community, they'll tell you, these are very good judges, very well qualified, and very conservative. And two, if you're going to scold someone for how they sided on an issue, why would you scold the people that sided with you?
Yeah.
It just goes back to sometimes I'm telling you, I've watched it from the front row. Some of these people, the only thing they hate more than abortions are pro-life people. It's just the truth.
Well, we joke about it in St. Charles all the time because we're such a pro Republican county that a lot of times we don't have enough Democrats to fight with, so we just fight with Republicans. That's much how we do it.
That is also a great way to describe the Missouri State Senate.
It has been for the last 3-4 years at least. Before you get out of here, how do you think that's going to line up? How do you think the Senate's going to look next year? Is it going to be a more, for lack of a better term, workable Senate, or you think this is this back and forth is going to continue?
I'm going to say let's talk to Nick Schroer.
Okay.
And I honestly think it's going to start off for the first couple, 3 months, while the mostly committee processes are working, I think it's going to start off with folks attempting to work together. Now, the only thing scarier than the Missouri Senate not passing anything is the Missouri Senate passing a lot of stuff. You should be very afraid if that happens. I think Nick Schroer from the St. Louis area in your county in St. Charles is going to be the pivotal senator. I think he's talented enough to lead an opposition and gum everything up if he wants to. But Nick has always been the type that wanted to pass things. He wanted to carry legislation for the cops. He wanted to carry pro-life legislation.
Okay.
Well, you can't do that if you're melting the place down. They'll just choke it up. So I think there's definitely going to be, Nick Schroer is going to be a major player in deciding that. And I believe, I mean, Nick has said on my show, he's going to start off the session working together. I think you'll get to spring break with a pretty collegial Senate. And then look, the system is made for that thing to spark toward the end. So if the Senate breaks down a couple times, it did before Bill Heigl.
True.
And it will after. And it's a good thing. So you got to let it work out. But yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. And I think I'm optimistic that you'll have a more professional, normal Senate. But I think Nick Schroer is going to have a lot to say about that.
Well, I appreciate you spending some time. I appreciate
always
you
fun.
Being here. It always goes so fast, doesn't it? I got the chance when Wendy Houseman, you let her guest host.
Oh, she's so great.
I got the opportunity to be on This Week in Missouri Politics, and that was cool. I've never been I'm not a state guy. So, you know, when you're a county council guy, nobody cares.
Well, you guys in St. Charles keep electing folks like Wendy. It's going to be harder to tease you.
You know, I think she is going to be, she'll be the vice chair, I think, of budget. This time.
Big deal.
And
big deal.
I think she's going to head that up, and I think that's a big thing for our part of the state.
Yep.
I think you're seeing an awful lot of folks from the St. Louis area who are getting into leadership, and I think we've needed that in the eastern part of the state. I will tell you
it's
one
important.
Thing that I take issue with that you say on a regular basis. Being from Poplar Bluff, you say hillbilly. Being a guy who's from the Ozark Mountains, I take issue with the fact you flatland boys can't say hillbilly.
Well, see, the Poplar Bluff is where the flats stop of the Delta and the Ozarks start. The county has the eastern side where we call the flatland web footers, and then where I live is in the western side where the hills start.
Okay.
So I can see from the farm where the Delta begins, but I live on a hill. I mean, you'll notice I don't roll my pants up to come out to the town, you know.
My grandfather used to tell me when we moved to Northwest Arkansas, he said, I think one of your legs is shorter than the other because you're standing on a hill all the time.
That'll do it.
So there you go. Hey, that is Scott Faughn. You can see him every week on This Week in Missouri Politics. You can also read the Missouri Times and catch up on what's going on. Great resource on state politics. My name is Mike Elam, sitting in for Annie Fry today. We're going to wrap up the big show on the other side on 97.1 FM Talk. So thanks for coming back with something that's just rocking. We went from Motley Crue to what the hell is this?
Well, all I heard was Hello Darkness, My Old Friend at the beginning. So this must be what's going to play on the station if Kamala wins.
This is Kamala's version of Simon and Garfunkel. Jesus.
A little depressing.
I know, kidding. I mean, it's chilly outside, the weather's changing, and we're going to play something like that. No, we're not doing that. Mark Reardon, how are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you? Do
Man,
I have
I'm,
a microphone I, on here? I'm so not
you're
used
all good.
To being on this side of the board.
I know.
I'm on this side of the board.
I haven't seen you in forever. So
I'm so confused by something. Can I just do this in real time?
You can.
Ethan, why are the microphones not on the left side of the board where you're working right now?
Why are the
like
microphones?
Where they are for me. Why are they in completely different spots?
Nope,
when
the mics are always here. You're just tripping.
Okay, all right. Then that's just me. I thought I saw. Forget it. We're just going to move on.
This is why you don't eat the mushrooms in the kitchen before you go on the radio. You
well,
never know what's... When people drop off food at a radio station...
That's true.
You never know.
For me, it's a lot of perspective. So I'm sitting usually where Ethan is sitting, and now I'm over where Sue sits, and I'm seeing things differently, so I was a little confused.
By the way, is Sue back today?
Yeah. We were both gone on Friday.
Yep.
Do you feel powerless over there
right now? Separate reasons. A little bit, yeah. I'm a control freak. You know that.
I do know that, yes.
Hey,
yes.
What's coming on of the big Mark Reardon show today?
Well, the first thing I have to do is share the story about my little daughter. I'm very proud of her. We went deer hunting on Friday, Mike. That's why I took the weekend off. There was a special doe season in many of the counties across the state, including Howard County, where I hunt. So that's where we were. A lot of stuff to share from the weekend. Some interesting tightening of the race, I think. Did you see SNL on Saturday?
Because
all of a sudden they've gotten very funny, but only on one side of the equation. So they do this bit with the Family Feud, and they have, you know, Gaffigan playing Tim Walz, and Dana Carvey's doing Biden, and Maya Rudolph's there, and I'm probably missing somebody.
Are you going to play that clip?
I am. That was so funny.
So I won't. I'm like, well, we have that.
I'm going to play it.
But I'll leave it for you.
But my point is that the idiots that were playing Vance and Trump and Donald Trump Jr., it wasn't funny at all. Like, even the audience didn't laugh. The audience was laughing a lot when they were making fun of Biden and Harris because it was funny. I mean, Dana Carvey doing Joe Biden, we have been robbed of that for the past few years. We've just been robbed as a nation.
And Maya Rudolph as Kamala Harris, she is spot on.
I think she is Kamala Harris. I'm starting to wonder.
It's kind of like Tina Fey when she was Sarah Palin.
It really is.
It's like sometimes is that Tina Fey or is that Palin?
Mike, you and I, young Ethan here is not old enough to appreciate the beginning stages of Saturday Night Live. And even in the 80s and the 90s when they had stretches, it's always kind of, you know, depended on the cast. But look what they're doing. They're doing cold opens on 50-year-old Saturday Night Live with cast members that aren't part of this cast because the part of the cast that's there right now is not funny. They're only funny because they're using Gaffigan, who I don't think was a cast member,
but
Dana Carvey and Maya Rudolph. You know, so these are people that used to be part of the cast, and they have to use them. How would you like to be a cast member on SNL trying to cut your teeth in comedy, kind of seeing, well, I'm not that funny. These other people are.
But we're going to bring in the rock stars from way back when.
Yeah.
And we're going to use those guys.
At least they're willing to do that, though. I mean, I tell you what.
Well,
you play Maya Rudolph's laugh next to Kamala's. I don't know if I'm able to tell the difference.
No. Yeah, she's
been
got
very
it down,
good.
For sure.
Where do you see this race going? I mean, in my mind, it really looks like Trump is picking up speed and the wheels are coming off her bus.
Okay, that's right. First of all, it was Andy Samberg who played Doug Emhoff, Kamala's husband, which he was great, too. I think that things are looking very good. Carl Cannon was on my show last week from Real Clear Politics, and he mentioned something that sort of resonated. If you go back to 2015, and Mike, you know, you were on top of this Trump thing a lot better than I was. We know that. That's been established. But he closed strong in 2015.
Yes.
He's closing strong now, and I think she's struggling. Here's something interesting. I'm sure you may have talked about it. Do you see she's doing an interview with Bret Baier tomorrow?
Yes.
Okay.
Gasparino talked about that.
That seems like a really bad idea for her.
That's a Hail Mary in my mind. I mean, you go from The View and Oprah, where you just completely fall flat on your face in those. And to make up for it, you have to go sit down with Bret Baier, who is a legit journalist.
I don't understand it. I really don't. I'm very confused by the move because I can't see how this is going to go well for her because he's the type of person who's going to follow up with questions.
He will.
He won't let her wiggle out. Now, we've seen a little bit of that with Bill Whitaker, so maybe they feel like, well, we handled this with Bill Whitaker, but they also edited the crap out of that
but
with the 60 Minutes.
Did it not bother you in the 60-minute interview that not only did they change her answers and move that around, but you had, while she was answering the question, Bill Whitaker started doing voiceover over the top and answering the question for her and saying, she went on to say, blah, 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 blah. Wait, why did you do that?
Well,
why didn't you let her finish her answer?
Okay. In fairness, you know, because I've done editing with television and radio for years, you sometimes have to do that for efficiency. Here's the bigger issue. They're not releasing the entire transcript.
That's the whole thing.
You know, one of the reasons they do 60 Minutes overtime is not everything's going to end up on the hour show. So they put things online, actually pretty beneficial. You can see more questions that way. In this particular case, I think that you're going to have some editing with 60 Minutes. Was it deceptive in the way that they released it? Yeah, I think it was.
I think it was, too. That's Mark Reardon. He is coming up on the other side of the break. It has been a lot of fun sitting in on Annie's show. I was here Friday. That's why I couldn't sit in for Mark. Although next time, if you've got a round table and your host isn't in studio, I'm happy to stay.
I know.
And do that for you.
I appreciate it. You know, Mike, that kind of bummed me out, but I had to take that day off, and I did not like not having a round table. So that's something to keep in mind.
But I look forward to being on the Mark Reardon round table soon. Ethan, John, thank you very much for all your helm. You guys have a great Monday, and I'll talk to you soon. Mike Elam for Andy Fry and 97.1 FM Talk.
Get more at 97.1talk.com.